This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Jason Burek of Wall Street for Main Street. Welcome back to another Wall Street for Main Street podcast interview. Today's special guest is a returning guest. He's one of my favorite guests. He actually got me interested in the silver market. He's the silver guru. Before he became interested in silver, he professionally worked in the private equity field in finance, and he's also the author of three books. His first book was Get the Skinny on Silver Investing. His second book was with Chris Marchese, Silver Manifesto. And his third book, which came out in October, is Second Chance, How to Make and Keep Big Money from the Coming Gold and Silver Shockwave. He also writes the paid newsletter, The Morgan Report, and he's the CEO and chairman of Lemuria Royalty, which is this new royalty and streaming company. David Morgan, thank you for joining me again.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's great to be back.
Now, David, first, before we talk maybe about the silver miners, gold and silver miners, since I know you and Chris cover that probably more extensively than any other paid newsletter out there with the costs and the grades, I want to ask you about sentiment for gold and silver. Do you think this is the worst ever sentiment you've seen for gold and silver, despite the prices, you know, being higher than they were in 2014 and 15?
Yes, with the qualification that there's more participation in these markets than there's been in a very long time. But the retail side is very, very discouraged. Basically, everyone that's heard the gold and silver story is in. That's going to take action. There's many that have heard the story and passed on it. So the retail side is definitely what I would consider to be burnt out. They have enough silver, enough gold. They've heard the story again and again. It seems like it's constantly getting squashed. There's no price action that makes them happy, and they're basically fed up. However, on the smart money side, you're starting to see the money move out of the equity market, which is very, very overvalued, into the gold sector primarily, somewhat in the silver sector as a very undervalued asset class. So gold itself, not gold mining stocks, but gold is the most negatively correlated asset. So if you're really good at managing monies on a cyclical basis, as Mike Maloney talks about, you want to be in stocks that are moving up. And then when everybody wants stocks, you want to get out of stocks and into gold. And then when gold moves up and everybody wants to buy gold, you want to remove yourself from gold to get back into equity. So that cycle is, in my opinion, taking place right now, but very few see it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's definitely a bifurcation there. There's a big divergence between the institutional money, the hedge funds, people who have made money off stocks and bonds and real estate, and they realize, you know, the valuations in those assets were long in a credit cycle. The Federal Reserve is, you know, all just raised interest rates again. They're threatening to reduce the balance sheet, which could lower the value of those other asset prices. And they're starting to move money into gold. And the divergence is with the mainstream investor who, when, as you know, my program is large and we have a large listener base. A lot of retail people also listen. And they tell me, you know, they're dumping their gold, silver, and mining shares, and they're going into Bitcoin, Ethereum. They're chasing whatever altcoins are because they're going up, trying to make up for lost gains. Kitco also just put out a survey today. I'm not sure if you saw this, but, you know, it's very interesting. They surveyed Wall Street professional investors who are about even for bullish, bearish on gold, 43% bullish versus 48% bearish. So close to even, but there's almost 2-1 for mainstream investors who are bearish gold compared to bullish.
Right. I don't have much to add. I mean, basically markets, I've been in them for so long, and it's not just me. Many can make this statement, but people really don't buy bottoms. I mean, the pros do. And what you're witnessing, again, is you're seeing the big money, the smart money is moving into the gold sector, but the retail market's really discouraged. And that's how you get a bottom to stay. In other words, that's where a bottom really forms, because the volume may not be large on any given day, but over time, it's an accumulation pattern, which means that the smart money keeps accumulating at a low level. And once that's accomplished, then you'll see what's called the markup, which means that the stock or the commodity starts to move up, 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 up. And in that momentum, then you'll see people early start to ride the wave, and then most will ride the wave at the very tippy top and then wonder why they, you know, didn't make these huge gains. It's because they waited too long.
Yeah, it was like the extreme bullishness we had when silver hit 48. That was probably the time to take some profits back in 2011, not the time to be adding to crazy positions. And a lot of people were getting on silver saying, oh, silver hit 48. You know, now it's going to break through 50. It's going to 75, going 100 in only a couple months. I used to see a lot of posts like that a long time ago. And so I think, you know, sentiment is overly bearish right now. And you've said recently that this is a quiet market right now for gold and silver. The paper prices for silver now we're below 17, and we see, you know, evidence with the U.S. Mint, the sales are not doing well for silver eagles. So I don't think it's what I think you've said. It's not wise to sell a quiet market, right?
It's an old market adage, especially on the commodity side. Never sell a quiet market. And it's proven to be true. Is it true 100% of the time? Probably not. Nothing is. But it's a very good indicator that, again, that we're seeing a situation where those that are ahead of the herd are moving into a situation that most have left.
I want to transition now and ask you about the state of the gold and silver mining industry. Do you think the mining industry has finally managed to do a good job cutting costs the last 5 years as gold and silver prices really haven't risen that much and we bottomed in late 2015? Or do you still think there's a lot more cost to cut and the industry is very inefficient?
Well, that's a mouthful. I would say yes. The very inefficient producers or near startups have been weeded out of the market just by price action alone and inefficiencies. I think most of your major producers from the top tier to the mid tier have really done a very good job on a whole of doing everything that they possibly can to mitigate these last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So on whole, yes. However, a lot of that has to do with the fact that the oil price has been decimated from the high and basis an open pit situation. This is a rule of thumb. It doesn't apply across the board to every single mine, but generally speaking, rule of thumb, about 25% of your cost basis is energy. In other words, it's diesel fuel primarily. And this means that these low costs are good for the industry, but don't bank on them remaining that way because it's been efficiencies based primarily on where you could cut employees, hours, overtime, and that type of thing. It's a lot of it has to do with the low cost of energy. So if energy starts to increase, you will see increases in cost across the board, pretty much. I mean, there's a few exceptions, but very few.
Yeah, it looks like, especially for silver miners and also for gold miners, that they're having trouble replacing reserves at the current price. I know you and Chris spend an enormous amount of time for your Morgan Report newsletter looking for new silver mines that are economic, looking at the producing gold and silver miners that can actually make a profit at the current price and have good growth that are, you know, not taking on higher cost projects or taking on too much debt. So is there new gold and silver deposits that can be brought on at current prices, or is the industry really going to need a much higher gold and silver price to replace reserves and grow production?
Yes, but very, very, very few. As you know, Jason, we've favored the streamers and royalties for a long time. I mean, if you look at one of the top tier picks that we have, still up 900%, and that's what, not counting the dividend structure, which is pretty rich for a gold situation. So if you factor that in, it'd be even higher. And this has been, you know, through thick and thin, so to speak. So there are, and just so everyone knows, I'll call this shameless plug. It's also true. I will be putting out a TMR pick on the exploration side. I haven't owned an exploration company in an extremely long time. And that will be coming out for everybody that's on the free list. So if you really want to know something that I like and have personally invested in, it is going to be revealed over the next few weeks on the free letter, the Morgan Report free e-letter. I will go into some depth, and of course the company has written a lot. Of course, full disclosure right at the top, I'll say I own it already. Most of the companies that are on the free e-list, if not to this one exception, have been vetted by us, but they wouldn't, let's say, reach the qualification that we require for what goes into our paid newsletter. However, a lot of these companies are what the public demands, which are micro cap or small cap companies that are very volatile, that have great stories, that get everybody excited and those type of things. And, you know, we're a free market. If that's what the market demands, we're certainly willing to put forth some of those situations. We did one recently on an alternative investment. Actually, it was pretty well written and very informational and truthful, objective type of view of an alternative market. But it certainly didn't resonate with those people on the free e-letter, and we had a lot of dropouts. And I don't know if I'll apologize, but we'll say I do pay attention, and I doubt we will talk about that sector in the future on that list. Nonetheless, people, rather than just see the subject line, I took a read of it. It would be quite informative for them, but we always try to produce information for both the free list and, of course, our paid list to be of maximum benefit for them, not only in their thinking, but in basically in their capital gains or in their pocketbook, net worth, and that type of thing.
Now, the Silver Institute in May put out a report saying for the first time in 14 years that silver supply has fallen. Why do you think silver supply has fallen so much?
Well, first of all, it's not that much. It's a very small percentage wise. And part of it has to do with price. I mean, you've got to be able to get it out of the ground at a profit, or you're going to have to close shop eventually. Now, a lot of mines actually mine at a loss, and there's a lot of reasons for that I won't discuss. I've done it so many times before in other interviews. But when you've got a product, you know, the old business school widget, and a widget costs X, and it's costing you X plus 0.01, it costs you a penny more, you're not going to stay in business forever. So that's the situation in a lot of these companies. And of course, there's ways to offset or get a tax loss to carry forward. And there's a lot of accounting situations, again, not to have the time to go into it. But basically, you want to have a margin that's robust. You want to have a great margin on whatever you're producing, be it, you know, out of the ground or above ground, manufactured product or mining. And that just does not exist across the board. I mean, that's why we have such a selective panel of stocks in the top tier and the mid tier and the speculative side of the Morgan Report, because it's not really that difficult to disqualify the majority of.
Do you think that the silver byproduct from base metal miners, that makes up like two-thirds, approximately 70%? I've seen a few different studies with different numbers of the annual global silver supply. Do you think that a lot of that supply is in peril then because of low base metals prices?
Some is. I mean, I'm not as bullish on copper as many of my peers. However, you know, I've been wrong before. Zinc, we're pretty favorable to. Zinc has a lot of uses, not as many as silver, but quite a robust market. And Chris is the one that brought it to my attention to take a harder look at the zinc market. And I think we've been at least 2 years ago where we found a zinc producer with huge silver credits. So it's a zinc mine, but most people would call it a silver mine. Regardless, that company's done pretty well for us. Conservative investment. Lead, you know, lead comes and is needed, of course. But to answer your question directly, yes, the base metal miners, I think, are overall going down, not up. In other words, the demand side, I think, is waning. I don't see this huge push that we saw for almost a decade with China buying everything in sight and the raw material sector going up in a, you know, huge way year after year. That's, I think, established itself where we are not going to see those kind of gains throughout the commodity sector anymore, which means that the byproduct amount of silver coming out will be less than it has been in years gone by.
Yeah, and I can add points to that. You know, as you know, I have other contacts in the gold and silver royalty and streaming space, and they've turned down silver streaming deals because of how bad the counterparty risk is with the base metal miner. So some of these copper miners are looking to sell silver streams, but you know, they could be bankrupt in 2 or 3 years. And so the silver stream is going to go away if the royalty and streaming company gives them capital now to delay bankruptcy. So a lot of these copper mines were brought online at a much higher copper price. And yes, they've cut the cost somewhat, but they're still left with really bad balance sheets. And these are not low-cost copper mines. So there's going to be, I think, future problems with that, which should help the silver supply and raise the silver price over time.
Exactly. I was saying some time ago, going maybe a year back in history, that I felt that at this juncture, we would see where the commodity or the money, metals, gold and silver, would break away from the from the sector. In other words, the overall commodity boom isn't going to happen again. But gold and silver keep rising, and then people say, well, my, I don't get it. You know, the commodities are really kind of flat here. Why are gold and silver rising? And the answer, of course, is because there is not a solution to the debt bomb. And so money or currency is moving into the one asset class that stood the test of time without, electronic jurisdiction. I mean, everyone talks about, counterparty risk, and it does exist. And it exists in the precious metals. I mean, when I wrote the 10 Rules of Silver Investing, I was very, very explicit that, be careful with who you deal with. You don't want to get a raw deal from your dealer. And a lot of times the lowest price is something that will give you a great price, but you won't get your product. And in fact, I was chastised about that statement on the internet many, many times about certain dealers that were so far below others as far as their pricing that I was basically, and you pick a name, you can use the F-bomb, I don't care, was used. And I just stood my ground. I really didn't reply in most cases to these comments because I had the experience. And lo and behold, several of them are gone. Poof, goodbye. And of course, now I get comments or let me say more directly, emails about, help me. Well, I did help you. I helped you in the very beginning and stated publicly, you don't want to get a raw deal from your dealer. So I don't mean to be too much on a tangent, but a lot of times you really need to think things through. Another quick example is people that buy a boatload of silver, sailboats, toy sailboats worth of gold, and they shop for like a quarter point on storage fees. And they're willing to put a great deal of currency into the precious metals, yet they want to save just a little token amount on who stores it. Not a good move. You want to store in a segregated situation, and yeah, it costs more, but you want to be able to walk into that facility and walk out with exactly what you put into it. And again, it's chasing pennies and perhaps losing dollars. So just a word to the wise.
Yeah, that's very interesting. There's been a lot of bullion dealers that have shut down for different reasons. There was Bullion Direct, Tolving, and a few others. So yeah, people have to be very careful where they buy their bullion from.
Another one, as I'm on that topic, is what I call the bait and switch. I mean, this is where, you get into a dealer that talks about, these coins have, first of all, that they could be confiscated. I don't buy that story, but Charles Savoy, makes a good argument that it could be. I won't go down that rabbit hole right now, but the point I'm making isn't the confiscation argument, which is used. One that seems much more used these days is one about, you can buy these semi-numismatic situations, pick your flavor, gold or silver, and they have a high potential and blah, 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 blah. And what really is the truth is that these are just bullion coins marked up to 30 or 40%. And the people on the other end of the phone that aren't familiar with what's going on end up paying a premium that doesn't need to be paid. I just got information on that recently from a friend of a friend, and it really bothers me. And the guys on the phone know what they're doing. They know that they're ripping off the public, and really they don't care. And it's too bad because, being in the honest money, hard money camp, my mission statement to teach and empower people to understand the benefits of an honest monetary or financial system, something I take to heart and I've devoted my life to do. And that's why I do so many free interviews. But nonetheless, you come into these situations around the gold and silver sector, and it's a complete and total ripoff. And there's very little recourse that can be done on a situation like that, unfortunately.
Now, the CEO for Franco-Nevada has said that the gold industry has no growth. The CEO of Goldcorp has been saying now for over a year that basically there's peak gold at the current gold price. He doesn't see any environment where the gold annual gold production can grow without a much higher gold price. So we're at below 17 silver right now. We're at $16.66 on Kitco for silver, $1,254 approximately for gold. Hypothetical question, if the gold and silver prices are around these prices 2 or 3 years from now, are the miners going to be able to survive, make a profit, or are they going to be going bankrupt then? Or there's going to be, crazy mergers, mines are going to shut down, there's going to be supply problems. What's the future then in that scenario if we don't have, 14, 15 $1,500 gold, $25, $30 an ounce silver in two or three years?
I'm going to answer that individually. Let's take gold. I mean, a lot of gold mines are out there at a 1 gram level. If you go back and you look at some of my geologist friends, I can name a few, I won't. They have told me several times, done it in lectures, public forums, and, you know, industry forums as well, that, you know, they would walk over lots of situations that were, you know, 3 gram, 2 gram, 1 gram gold. It was ridiculous. It was like mining dirt. I mean, it wasn't viable. And in today's world, the industry is mining gold at 1 gram. But that portends the answer. And the answer is, how low can you go? In fact, there's a project that's getting kind of pushed to my desk over and over again. It's 0.08 gram. And can you make money on those kind of grades? The answer is, yes, you can. I mean, I have to be truthful here, but the margins are so slight that any increase in cost, be it energy or otherwise, you really cut into the situation. I mean, we have a special report at the Morgan Report for members only called Archie's Rule, and it's an extremely useful chart that talks about when you invest in a resource company, it doesn't have to be a gold company, what kind of margins you need to have in order to have an ongoing concern. That model that I just outlined, I won't give the name, of course, would not fit Archie's Rule. It's not robust enough. So the answer is peak gold, yes, absolutely. I believe peak gold because of the grades and what they are averaging and what the replacement costs are. And these larger companies cannot find reserves at a low enough cost to build back their businesses. So that I'm pretty solid about. On the silver side, slightly different because it's a more complex issue to address, which you've already done a great job about, which means you've got to look at the base metal side, which is 70% of the market, and we addressed that already. And then on the other side, so how much big silver deposits are out there that are really robust, which is huge margins? And the answer is no one knows. I am familiar with one. Again, I'll be putting out for the free e-letter readers, and it's large. It is large. I think I'll still rely on my work with Chris Marchese, and Chris did most of the hard digging and I did the topsoil, and that was what we saw for peak silver. I think peak silver is out a few years, you know, like 2 or 3, not 10, but I don't know. But it does depend on, many other factors, again, which are more complicated to get than gold. So we do need to keep an eye on it, and of course the price. I mean, as we all know, but just to refresh everyone's memory, what's not a good silver mine at, you know, $16 can be a significantly robust mine at, say, $35. So it's really difficult without knowing the price, you know, situation in the future, you know, how much silver is economic. But let me just state this. I think with what's going on globally from the financial side and the debt situations held by most of these countries, that we are not going to see a situation where you're going to be able to put very many, if I won't say with any, but very few into production in time to really make any significant difference whatsoever. Why? Because by the time that the push is on to get, you know, productions increased based on, let's say, a huge spike in the precious metals prices, basically be too late. It won't be to bring up the industrial side of the, where people want, you know, silver for iPhones. It'll be because there's a financial wave that's taken place. And David and I addressed that in the Second Chance book. We're not going to see this next wave up because, again, of the commodity boom. We're going to see it because of the financial situation deteriorating at a rapid rate.
Yeah, and for our listeners out there, peak gold, peak silver, it doesn't mean we're running out of metal. It means at a certain economic price, you know, there's not unlimited amounts of gold to mine at 1,000 or unlimited amounts of gold to mine at 1,200. So the industry obviously is going to go through the most economic projects. They're going to get the capital and those mines built first. That's a low-hanging fruit at a certain price. I think, you know, David and I have covered this in this interview, and we could name, you know, specific mines, but probably won't. We won't now, but if you are interested, you can subscribe to David's newsletter, or you can email me. But, you know, the industry, there's just not a lot of economic gold mines at 1,200 anymore. There's not a lot of economic silver mines below 17 anymore. So those projects have been put into production since 2009. If they've been producing metal since 2009, they're already probably halfway through their mine life or more. And that's assuming, you know, that they can go out there and replace the reserves. So I think the situation we're in now, David, is definitely unsustainable. Something's going to have to give. I don't see the mining companies on their balance sheets generating robust free cash flow. Maybe some of them are generating a couple dollars an ounce margin if they're a primary silver producer, and there's a couple primary gold miners, you know, generating $400 or $500 an ounce. But those are not the whole industry, though.
No, well said. I can't add on to that. You're correct.
But do you think if the silver manipulation continues, then this thing can the silver manipulation cannot continue indefinitely, you know, knocking the price down lower and lower? It's going to have probably some real world ramifications then with the supply, especially for silver, say if the manipulation takes silver down to 15 or 14.
Agreed. I mean, I know a lot of people are frustrated, and yours truly is as well. But, you know, every manipulation ends. The market, again, is much tighter than the price would indicate. And there is some, you know, stockpiling going on with certain firms. And if you just look at, you know, reality, I mean, if you look at Vino Silver, which is one I own and one that we've recommended for a long time in the report, I mean, basically their whole offtake is held by a electronics company. You know, it makes it pretty easy to sell your silver. Why did they do that? Because they know that it's essential to their product line to be able to have X amount of silver. So they basically made a deal directly with the mine to obtain that silver. And you'll see more and more situations like that as we move forward.
That would be good for firms to bypass the COMEX and the LBMA, because, you know, these markets are corrupt, David. The Shanghai Gold Exchange, I think, is quite a bit more honest than these other markets, but it's really amazing. I know you're friends with Jim Poplava, but I remember him telling me the story that, you know, the COMEX was supposed to have a lot of physical silver in its inventory. He ordered a ton of silver. During the 2008 financial crisis, they were obviously supposed to have the silver in inventory, and it took him more than 6 months to get the delivery. So, you know, that's incredibly dishonest what they did.
It's interesting. I did it myself during that same time frame, and I went through a primary dealer, and I didn't have that big an issue as far as timeline is concerned. But no, these markets, I mean, I don't know what else to add on. It's just very, very discouraging. And I want to just refresh everyone's memory. It's just not in the precious metals. It's really across the board. And as I said at a lecture a long time ago up in Vancouver, I think it's been about 3 years, I was talking about, well, if you really want to talk about manipulation, the major manipulation, and Chris and I did this in the book Silver Manifesto, it's interest rates. So if you can manipulate interest rates, basically you manipulate every market that exists. And I stand by that statement today. And of course, that's the major situation overall. I mean, the banks are manipulating as much as they can through the debt markets to keep the game going. And then, to quote the famous Jim Sinclair, pretend and extend. Pretend everything's going to work out, everything's going to be okay, and extend the problem as long as you can. So when it does blow up, it's going to be, as Jim Rogers recently stated in a great interview, I'm a big fan, that you know, the next one isn't going to be like the last one. You think we got close to the edge last time, we're going off the cliff this next time.
Yeah, it's management of perception economics, which is another, or MOPE, which is another thing Jim Sinclair said. Yeah, it's, there's a lot of lying going on, whether it's GDP, the CPI numbers, there's a lot more inflation than that. The jobs numbers are totally fake. Really, David, if you go back and look at all what the Bureau of Labor Statistics and what Ben Bernanke said after the 2008 financial crisis, they were saying how all the jobs created were from restaurant and retail. Well, what are all the – there's tons of retail stores being closed right now. So all the places where they said that were creating jobs are now being destroyed. So I don't trust those. My last question before I let you go, since I know you're in the royalty and streaming business, is there a lot of good royalty and streaming – deals available right now, or is there a lot of bad deals because of, you know, these private equity firms coming in, these large pension funds willing to come in and bid on these deals? I've heard from my other contacts that, you know, there's a lot of bad counterparties out there, and the returns for some of these royalty and streaming deals, you know, their internal rate of return is how you measure a deal. There's other ways to measure it as well, are extremely poor.
Totally agree. I mean, there have been deals out there that are in the public domain that ROI, return on investment, is like, you know, flat. It's basically zero. And we are striving to be in like 15 to 20%. And we're working on one I can't say much about that will be actually unique to the industry if it actually takes place. Well, I won't say much more than that, but it is hopeful. We have gone through several that do not meet the criteria. You know, we take the money that's invested in us to manage very seriously. And because of that, just to do a deal to get one done is like buying real estate. I divert slightly, but you know, a lot of people think they're real estate investors when they're real estate speculators. Because if you're buying a piece of real estate, be it a single family home or an apartment or a warehouse or whatever it is, if you are betting on the price going higher, that's a speculation. An investment means you get a return of capital. So if you put in, you know, $200K into a real estate venture, a piece of property, whatever it strikes, you want to get a, let's say, 8% return on that money immediately. So if it's not cash flowing back to you with a return on capital, then you're not investing. And this is the same situation on some of these streaming deals lately. It's like, well, the price of gold and silver are going up. Therefore, you know, we'll make no money now. But once the price increases, we'll be doing great. No, no, thank you. That's not investing.
Amen. Amen. Sandstorm, I don't know if you caught this, but on their last conference call, Sandstorm Gold was talking about this, and they said they've been seeing a lot of deals way below 5% IRR, you know, an increasing amount of deals at 1% IRR or zero, and even a few at negative IRR. Just people coming in desperate to throw around money and do deals for the sake of doing deals, not even thinking really about cash flow positive deals. It's really amazing.
I would rather man up and give the money back to the investors with the one royalty we already have, which does have a great IRR, and say I failed than to waste anyone's money. I'm not going to do, well, you know, I won't say what I'm going to do. Well, but I mean, that's my attitude. Look, I have a fiscal responsibility to these people, and I, again, take it seriously. And let's say people, there are others that use OPM, other people's money, and have a different attitude than let's say I have. And I'm not trying to single myself out. I'm trying to actually get back to what the basics of capitalism are, which means it's a win-win-win. I truly believe in that. And it can be, but unfortunately, the market started to heat up somewhat and deals were made that we are certainly willing to take a pass on and wait.
Yeah, amen, David, about win-win-win deals. There's a lot of people right now, whether they're hedge fund managers or investment bankers or others, who are willing to do deals, you know, at any valuation just to justify like their high salary so they can go out and release press releases and say, hey, look, we did a deal. And then it spun, you know, but when you run the numbers, the deal's not good. But they, you know, the PRs don't say that.
Exactly.
Well, David, I really enjoyed our discussion today, and I can't recommend your newsletter more highly enough for people who do want to put serious amounts of capital into gold and silver companies, because I think I know the amount of work that you and Chris do. You go and visit the mines, you spend the hours and hours listening to company conference calls and looking at the financial statements. And, you know, to be honest, I've met a lot of the newsletter writers in gold and silver, and a lot of them don't do that, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to add on to that. I mean, and I probably will get a lot of hate for this, but it's okay because I've certainly had my fair share of that over the years. But I just recently was at the writers conference up in Vancouver, and we had a speakers dinner, which we've passed on because the industry's been so tight. They really didn't have the money to put one on or felt, you know, they didn't want to. And there's a gentleman that was sitting right next to me and talking and talking. It became self-evident after a while that he was a subscriber to the Morgan Report. Well, this guy had left the hedge fund industry and he's in the newsletter industry now. And what he was saying, and this is a quote, believe it or not, folks, he said, you know, your kind of research is with $25,000 to $50,000 a report to a hedge fund manager. So, you know, is it or isn't it? That's his words to me. Believe it or don't believe it, hate me or don't, I really don't care. What I do want to emphasize here is that we do stand apart. And probably if you were objective, you'd say, well, this type of research is based more for the institutional side than the retail side. But I am biased and bent toward the underdog. I've always believed in a bottom-up strategy rather than a top-down. And again, the newsletter is priced at a level that's really very, very reasonable if you compare it in the right structure, which would be actually comparing it to an institutional quality situation, which means that it's probably fair priced or undervalued. and it's available to those that are savvy enough to understand it. Certainly not for everybody. I never wrote it for everybody. I don't want everybody to be my friend. All I want is to do high quality work at a very reasonable price for those people that are so inclined that really want to get the skinny on this sector with no BS. And we've, as you know, since you see our work, what kind of an attitude I have and have carried basically from day one.
Well said, David. Well, I just want to thank you again for your time today. And for our listeners out there who haven't read your book, Silver Manifesto with Chris Marchese, it's available on audiobook on Audible. I even took the time to write a good review for it. I think it's a very good book. It's not for beginners, though, because there's an explanation of the Austrian theory of the business cycle in there. But if you're a little bit more advanced and know some business and some reasonable amount of free market Austrian school economics, it's a very good book.
Well, thank you for that. I can hardly wait for our next interview. This is one of the more stimulating ones I've had lately. Thank you.
Wall Street for Main Street needs your help. YouTube stole $7,200 from Wall Street for Main Street in annualized YouTube AdWords revenues, and they kneecapped our analytics down by more than 80% across the board since September 2016 with their new censorship algorithms to stop the rapid growth of our channel. That was money we could have used to upgrade our website, pay bills, and invest in improving our content and growing our business. Our audience of loyal listeners is all over the globe and so large now that if most or all of our listeners were to commit to donating $1 to $5 each month to our Patreon account, we could easily meet our goal on Patreon. Wall Street for Main Street also accepts one-time donations on our main wallstreetformainstreet.com website. That's WALLSTFORMAINST.com website via PayPal, gold money, or Bitcoin. We also accept donations of physical precious metals that can be mailed to us. Thanks to all listeners who have already made a donation, and thanks in advance to any listeners who make a future donation or contribution to the growth, improvement, and success of Wall Street for Main Street.
This is The Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.